we're back. We're back with Bantha Fodder. My name's Mike Comite from Brooklyn, New York, and joining me, as always and forever and after, is Jacob Tender. Jacob, how are you?
I'm great, Mike. I'm feeling really good. How are you?
I'm good. It's late night in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I know we're in the same time zone, but it feels like late night here.
I always feel like New York is ahead, but I know it's not.
It's not. We are absolutely on the Eastern Standard Time.
But it is really far. It's far away not to be in another time zone.
It is.
The East Coast should have their own thing.
Yeah, it's, well, you're in Ohio, and then you have Indiana between you and Chicago, which is where the time zones change, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely taken me aback a few times, driving from Columbus to Chicago, and you think you're going to be on time for a show, and you're just not on time for a show, because you're...
Oh, because you're an hour late?
Yeah, exactly. You never factor... Well, you make the mistake once, and you try not to do it again, and you usually don't do it again.
I just hate getting on a plane and having, you know, my time set and then expecting to, you know, have a really short flight down to Atlanta or something like that. And then
hours.
Getting off the plane thinking that I'm late, but then realizing that because I've been on the plane with airplane mode that my phone hasn't caught up yet. So I'm actually good. You ever had that? That freaks me out because I'm like, wait, this plane was supposed to land 20 minutes ago, 40 minutes ago. Ah, what's happening? I'm going to miss my next connection. And then you land and the airplane mode goes off and everything goes back to normal and you got an hour to get a Cinnabon.
I usually just miss my connection regardless. That's kind of my MO. It's just missing flights, missing connections.
I've never missed a flight and that terrifies me. The thought of missing a flight absolutely terrifies me.
It's not as bad as you think. I missed my last flight. It was like a 7 a.m. flight and I woke up at 4 to get there on time. And you know, I'm very cheap, so I will not pay $40 to $60 for a cab in New York City to the airport. So I take the $2.50 train ride. And that is what got me, is trying to catch a train at 4 in the morning in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh my gosh. And that's an expensive thing to miss, though.
Well, it's the thing is, you miss it and... Depending on, I think most airlines are pretty flexible now. They just get you on the next flight that's available.
Really? That's good.
JetBlue was very good to me, and they just put me on the next flight. And it was a good trip because of that.
I've heard nothing but good things about JetBlue, and I really want to try flying them sometime.
JetBlue, if you're listening, Bantha Fodder would love your sponsorship. We are happy to endorse you. This is a freebie, but the next one's going to cost you. So from here on out, no more talk of JetBlue until they pay us.
Oh, Mike, I really want to tell you about this toy I bought.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so I've been waiting on this thing for a week because FedEx couldn't find my house for some reason, but I got this Star Wars toy from Target last week, and they had a sale when The Force Awakens came out on DVD and Blu-ray, and they had like $25 off or something for orders over $100. So I got this Elite Special Forces TIE Fighter. It's the First Order Special Forces TIE Fighter, and it's the Black Series edition. So it actually fits two full-size Black Series figures inside the cockpit.
Okay, so there's one pilot and one gunner then, right?
Yeah, it comes with the one pilot, and I guess you can just put whoever you want in there. But it's huge, and it's sweet. I haven't even opened the box yet. It's sitting next to me, but I'm looking at it right now on Target, just looking at all the details, and I am so excited to get this thing hung up.
I was actually, there was a graphic that came up on the internet this week of all the TIE fighters that are out there, and I was just looking at them all and marveling at how many they could come up with. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about the new the First Order TIE fighters and how different they are from the original trilogy TIE fighters with having a gunner in place. I thought that was really unique.
And they're so much more menacing looking.
It's cool. I also just like the idea of having a gunner. It just reminds me of like a speeder, like a rebel speeder with a Hoth, you know, or just having a tow cable in the back or something.
Oh, dude, that reminds me of, okay, I'm reading Lost Stars right now, and I know you haven't read it, so I'm not going to spoil it for you. I really do want you to read this one next, though, because it's so good. It's so good. This is the best Star Wars book that I have ever read. It's just, it hits me right in the feels. I don't know if it's the best as far as like adding to the story goes, and I know that's something you really like, but it interweaves throughout the entire original trilogy, and it just follows like two characters that go two very different directions as they grow up, and it's really interesting, but a couple of characters from the original trilogy show up that make it really interesting.
Ask me if I've finished Aftermath yet.
Mike, it's been a couple months. Have you finished Aftermath?
Hell no. No, I'm cruising through it. I'm pushing through. It's not a tough read. It's I can only take so many names, and there are a lot of names and places in that book, and it's just,
yeah,
I can't wait to talk to you about it, but I'm getting there, I promise.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll save that conversation for another time, but I'm excited for you to finish it, and I hope to kind of leaf through it again to refresh my thoughts, because as much as I enjoyed it, I think you and I probably have a lot of similar complaints.
Yeah, and likes, I think. There's a lot of likes, good points about that book.
Yeah, we'll save that for another time.
It's coming. It's coming, I promise.
You want to follow up on last episode at all?
Well, I did have some thoughts, you know? I mean, we were definitely hard on a lot of theories, and I'm happy we were hard on a lot of theories, but I don't know. There's just... I mean, I guess this ties in with something we talked about a long time ago, which is rewatching Star Wars for the first time since its release in theaters in December. I rewatched Force Awakens a couple nights ago, and I did it with my two roommates. And I will say that I will stand by my original thoughts and say that I'm happy I did it the way I wanted to and waited till it came out instead of seeing it again in theaters.
Okay.
It was just kind of like the whole movie kind of glossed over in my mind, and then I was redefining it kind of and seeing all the things that you had pointed out to me and that the forums had pointed out to me and random people on the internet had pointed out. So it was good. It was good to kind of put it all together. But at the same time, after the movie finished, my roommate just looked at me, and she's not a huge Star Wars fan. And she goes, so Rey is Luke's daughter, right? And I was like, and I took my Bantha fodder stance, you know, very strongly, and just like, no way. Absolutely not. And she's just like, okay, but she's his daughter. Like, she just thought I was messing with her. And I was like, no. And she's like, well, why not? I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, I can see why you'd say that, you know, so it sort of makes sense in that respect. But, and then my other roommate, he was kind of like, no, it's definitely, he's definitely, I mean, Rey is Luke's daughter for sure. You know, and I was like, I just don't.
Well, I think the issue is that it seems like the obvious choice, right? I mean, we talked about this last week, like her being Luke's daughter, you know, it follows the trend. And it seems like the obvious fit as far as the story goes, as far as it's gone so far. So I totally get why maybe the more, I guess, general population watching Star Wars would probably see that and think, oh, well, of course, like, you know, they're going to have another Skywalker, I'm your father sort of moment. So I don't know. Do you think that's what's going on, or do you think that they want that for other reasons?
No, I think they are definitely thinking that way in terms of like, there has to be another Skywalker, you know, why else would a lightsaber call to her and whatnot. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm relying too much on story writing technique and like, and what I think would be right. And that's the kind of the thing that I came to realize and what their assessment of it was, is that everybody takes so much baggage with them into a Star Wars film. They take everything that they've accumulated over their life and their experience with it. And not just Star Wars, they take their story writing skills and their story writing interpretations and what they think is a good movie and what they think would make a good movie in the future, or a good sequel. And, you know, my roommate at the end of it, he's like, oh, well, I was watching the entire movie this time around to see if Han was giving any furtive glances to Rey, or like, you know, seeing if like implying that Han knew something that Rey didn't know, or that if anybody else during the movie was kind of like in on something else. And he swore up and down that he saw those glances, that he saw looks in Han's eyes and I would never admit to seeing that, you know, but that's kind of what occurred to me, is that how subjective watching this movie is, and that everybody takes their own thing away from it in the end. And and there's like nothing I could do to budge him on that.
Yeah.
Being like, I mean, and how could you? How could you say like, no, the way that Han is looking in that scene is nothing to do with what he knows Rey is, because that's what he believes. And
right.
I know what I believe.
I mean, nobody's opinion is like more important than ours or anybody else's, you know, we just have our own ideas. So, I mean, and that's what speculation is. That's what makes all of this so enjoyable, is to kind of see what everybody's thoughts are and to provide their reasoning. I mean, every theory has some sort of, you know, basis of truth to it. Some of them are more ridiculous than others at a macro level. But once you dig into it, like, there are definitely spots where like, yeah, I could see why that makes sense, or why at least you might think that, even if I don't.
Pablo Hidalgo tweeted something interesting a couple days ago, remarking on I mean, he fields a lot of theory questions and like just super fans just kind of pointing out all these little plot holes or like little signs that they see, kind of the subjective things, you know. And he pointed out back when episode one came out about the confusion about Palpatine versus Darth Sidious and and how people were theorizing that they weren't the same people and Palpatine was just a like a clone or something like that and all this wild stuff. And it was just, you know, and as a kid when I saw that movie, I just saw Darth Sidious looking exactly like the Emperor did in Return of the Jedi, and I was like, oh well, that is absolutely the same person. I knew Palpatine was Palpatine, the Emperor, and I was like, okay, so Palpatine the Senator is just Darth Sidious and that's the end of it, you know. But I mean, people who were, I guess, our age now in 2016, who are like in their mid-20s and huge fans of Star Wars back in whenever episode one came out, they're just kind of like they overthought it, you know. But it ended up just being an Occam's razor situation where the simplest thing, it's just the same dude. And so that's kind of what I think about with Rey. When Pablo Hidalgo brought that up, I was like, oh well, maybe it is Occam's razor. Maybe we should just be ready for Rey to be Luke's daughter, and that's just gonna be it, you know.
I flip-flop back and forth on it. You know, I keep thinking, like, no, there's no possible way they'll go that route. Like, it's just too obvious. You know, it's too easy. But
then
on
again,
the other hand, like, it's, you know, it's proven to work. You know, why fix what's broken? Why change the pattern? So, who knows? Either way, I'm going to live with it.
We might be eating crow come 2017.
Yeah, well... I hope we don't. You know, I still really hope that they make it a little more mysterious than that. I don't want it to be explained out in episode 8 by, you know, the Luke and Rey father-daughter bonding moments. I think while that might be a little different than what we've seen so far in the Skywalker lineage, I still think that there's room in this galaxy for more powerful Force users that are outside of the Skywalker family, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, these are all hopes and dreams of ours and what we wish, but only Disney's got the final say in this one.
That's true. So I got a user email on episode 7.
Really?
Yeah, they brought up a cool little point about something that you said about not accepting Rey's role in Han's death.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you obviously stuck to really well, but later on you did make reference to, and blame Qui-Gon Jinn for Vader's outcome. So I just wanted to know if, you know, if you had anything to say on how you could say that Qui-Gon Jinn was the reason for Vader becoming Vader when Rey couldn't possibly have had any role in Han's death.
Because that's the most boring reason why Vader became Vader. That's the cause and effect thing that we talked about. Like, sure, Rey had to do with Han Solo's death, but in a cause and effect way where, you know, like, you know, Poe Dameron getting captured was part of that too. Because then BB-8 got separated and ran away and ran into Rey and set off the whole chain of events. That's a boring way to look at it. Mm-hmm. The same way that Qui-Gon Jinn wanting to train Anakin in the first place was. I mean, Anakin became Darth Vader because he wanted to keep his wife alive because he saw her dying in childbirth. That's how I see the change from Anakin. You know, Anakin was Anakin, you know, as best as we can see in all the prequels and Clone Wars. He's just, he had a lot of personality traits that were kind of favoring the dark side in the first place, but you know, in the end it was his love for Padme and like desire that led him into the depths of the dark side. It's a good call out.
Yeah. I don't think Sam, who was the user, I don't think Sam Fox was trying to call you out or anything. He just wanted to bring up that point and just kind of see what your thoughts were. So that was a good response. I think you're right. I think, you know, as hard as I drive home the whole it's Rey's fault thing, like, yeah, there are obviously a lot of factors involved, and you know, you can think whatever it is you want to think.
Subjectivity is going to be the theme of this episode.
Apparently nothing matters, and it's all whatever you think.
I guess, yeah, you being the royal you, I guess,
or just you as in you listening now, you Tim.
Who was your person a few episodes back?
Jim?
No, it was probably. Like a way worse name. It was like Garf, it was like Art.
Oh, like yeah. I don't know. Someone can listen back and
Duncan.
Find out.
I don't even know.
It'll be a different one every time. Tim is the go-to for Hello Internet, so we'll have to come up with our own.
Okay.
Hello Internet, or listen back to whoever it was last time.
On the subject of subjectivity, I mean, I guess tonight's topic is wholly subjective because we came at it on two totally different angles, I guess, in terms of excitement levels.
Yeah.
Rogue One, the trailer dropped last week. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
It came out a while ago. We're a little late to the game on this. I think everybody else has done their dissection episode, but I still think it's worth talking about because this looks so cool.
Yeah. Oh, man. I've been poking around at other reactions and dissections and... I will say the reason that I'm so happy to do this one on this episode is because of the amount of effort you put into it, Jacob. And if anybody has not checked it out yet, I highly recommend going to Jacob's blog, which we're going to link to in the show notes, and checking out this post he made because he went all out on this trailer. He created these beautiful GIFs or GIFs, whatever you want. I don't give a damn.
GIFs.
Okay. For you, it's GIFs. Subjectivity.
oh my god!
But anyway, these are hover over GIFs. So if your cursor kind of hovers over these GIFs, they start moving, and I think that's a really cool feature. It will take you roughly 2 hours for the page to load, but
it's come on,
it's definitely worth it. We're recording now at 11 p.m. and I started loading the page here at 8 p.m. So just to have it ready for the show.
That's a little unfair. 2 hours is a bit much. It does take a while to load. These are high quality GIF images, and I've been doing my best to try to get it down. I've been looking at some other options, but as far as the time constraints that I had went and my technical know-how at the time, I did the best I could. I had to learn some jQuery, and I know nothing about jQuery. So everything that you see in this, I learned in about 10 hours in making this post.
So what's the website again? It's curbside.audio.
Yep, absolutely. Curbside.audio. And it's in one of the recent posts. Otherwise, you can go to the search page and just search Star Wars, but it should still be on the front page at least.
Yeah,
for a
I just
while.
Typed Curbside Audio into Google and you were the first thing that came up. So
yep, that'll do it.
Yeah, so anyway, this post is beautiful and it certainly deserves to be seen. So go check that out if you want a companion guide to this episode because we are going to be dissecting this trailer
bit by bit. So yeah, so what we have here... if you're following along, I broke down each individual shot, you know, and put the GIF out there so you can kind of look at each bit frame by frame, and just take it all in one go. It kind of slows it down a little bit because they're packing a lot into these trailers. There's something like 22 shots or something in the minute and 48 seconds that we got in this trailer, which is pretty impressive and to me it was pretty thrilling. So. Let's dive in. You want to start at the top? I guess we can do a bit of a primer with the cast as far as we know it, or at least the ones that are featured in the trailer.
I see a lot of unknowns on here.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot we don't know. Obviously, this is the first teaser. They put out a promotional image sometime last year that had some of the main cast, including Felicity Jones, who will play Jyn Erso. She is the main character of the story as far as we know it. Not a whole lot we know about her. We'll kind of dig into that based on what, or at least speculate on what we know about her as we get into the episode here. Diego Luna is a young actor who will be playing an unknown rebel soldier of some description. Looks like he will be one of the secondary cast members. Riz Ahmed will be playing Badi Rook. Ben Mendelsohn is going to be an Imperial Admiral of some description, and oh man, I can't wait to figure out exactly what his name is because there are some great theories out there. Alan Tudyk is going to be in the movie as a Rebel-owned Imperial Enforcer droid. I believe this is a motion capture performance. Jonathan Aris will play Senator Jabel. Genevieve O'Reilly has been recast as Mon Mothma. Genevieve O'Reilly played Mon Mothma in some scenes that were cut from Episode 3. So it's kind of great that, you know, a decade later she's brought back into the fold by Lucasfilm to reprise her role as Mon Mothma, and she is a dead ringer for the original actress. So
oh, absolutely. I did a double take when she came on screen.
Really exciting. Awesome casting. Alistar Petrie will be a rebel general. Donnie Yen, martial artist, will be some sort of unknown blind martial artist, then Zhang Wen will be in the movie, as well as Forrest Whitaker, Mads Mikkelsen, and Eunice Alumide, I think is how you say her name, not quite sure. But some really big names in here. We don't have canon names for them yet, but it's really exciting to see some names like Mads Mikkelsen and Forrest Whitaker in this movie, because they've been around for quite a while and they have quite a filmography under their belt already. So
a lot of Battlefield Earth references and jokes when talking about this trailer dissection.
Yeah.
Forrest Whitaker in sci-fi, you know, he doesn't have a lot going for him before this moment.
It's cool, though. He looks sweet.
He does. He looks a lot better than he did in Battlefield Earth. That is for sure.
All right. So one thing to note as we get through this, there is a distinct lack of Darth Vader in this trailer. We're not entirely certain whether or not Darth Vader is going to be in the film. Rumors highly suggest that he will be, but to what capacity, we're not quite sure. There have been recent reports that suggest that Spencer Wilding will play Darth Vader, and you might remember this actor as the guy at the prison in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's the blue guy who takes the tape deck. That guy. So he's in the science fiction universe already. He's a big dude, so I could totally see him playing the role. I'm not sure what is going to be done for voice or anything like that. Again, really have no idea how much Darth Vader we're going to get in this movie, if any. I really hope we get some.
There were rumors of those storyboards, which showed him just mercilessly destroying people and decapitations and stormtrooper shields and whatnot.
I want to see that so badly, but we haven't seen any yet.
Well, the only thing about that I was kind of questioning is that I don't know if they just looked at panels for the Darth Vader comic book that's on Marvel right now, just because all those things they're describing are things that are happening. There's panels of comic panels with Darth Vader using stormtroopers as shields and that. So I don't know if people were just like getting overexcited about Darth Vader, but that was in Star Wars news recently, those storyboards.
Very cool. I mean, can you imagine how ruthless would that be? That'd be so great. So far, really all we've got of Vader is just him marching angrily down a hall in like a really bad sword fight with Obi-Wan, and then his battle with Luke, which honestly wasn't that much more impressive. So
I think it fit the character well, but I will say, as long as he's not flipping like Yoda did in episode 2, I would be totally content with Darth Vader being in this film.
Yeah, I just want a little blood. This movie promises to be a little grittier, so I want a little blood.
Yeah, God knows we definitely need some more gritty sci-fi, you know? It's not enough of that.
Well, it beats what we're probably going to get out of a majority of the episodic movies under Disney's control, so.
Oh my God, I can't wait for the romantic comedy. It's going to be great.
Or the Judd Apatow-directed Netflix feature.
Oh my God. Bossk.
Oh, man. Oh. It's just about a family of Jawas, all voiced by Paul Rudd.
And they all just say, it's just not in English, subtitled completely.
And all the voices are done by Bill Hader. All right, let's dig into this. First shot. Okay, hovering over the first shot here, what do we got, Mike?
Something I'm really excited about for this movie, maybe one of the only things I'm excited for about this movie besides the possibility of Darth Vader, is the old Rebel aesthetic that we're going to get, that old episode 4 kind of helmet on all the pilots, and just those cool jackets, you know, that we kind of got to see throughout the original trilogy that kind of were just dismissed for robes in the prequels. That's going to be great.
Yeah, just looking at this first shot, we've got Jyn Erso. She's walking down a hallway. It looks like she's handcuffed, and she's being led by two rebel enforcers of some description. They have large white horseshoe crab helmets on their heads with giant chin straps. Looks very 80s.
A la the opening scene from episode 4.
It looks great. I mean, there's not a whole lot in the shot. It's kind of dark. But, you know, as they walk through the doorway, you see a bustle of activity in what looks like a hangar, and that's what we're going to see in the next shot. But an important thing to note that in the background of this, we begin to hear a new take on Binary Sunset that is composed by... how do you say his name, Mike?
Despla? I don't know. Alexandre Despla. I have no idea. I'm not French. I don't speak French. Alexander. I'm going to say Despla.
however you say his name, this guy has a ton of music credits under his discography. He's got Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Twilight Saga, Harry Potter. This guy has scored a lot of stuff, and he's getting his hands into the Star Wars universe, which is cool because this will be the first Star Wars feature that isn't scored by John Williams.
Oof.
So this first bit of the music that he's creating for this movie is a twist on the Force theme classic. It's a bit darker. It's played in I believe this is a minor key, so it's a bit more somber. It's playing in the background as the shots fade in and out, and in the background, a man's voice kind of rings out.
State your name for the record.
You know, she says her name.
Jin Erso.
Those big, like, trailer drum sounds. So that brings us to the next shot, which shows us Jin being led now by one of those rebel enforcers through a rebel hangar. It's strange that she's walking behind the rebel enforcer and not in front. They don't really seem to mind that she's on her own. But then again, she's surrounded by rebels who are probably armed. So I guess they probably don't care too much.
And she is still handcuffed by some LED flashing handcuffs, looks like.
Yeah, those look pretty heavy duty. I can't really tell, but I think the rebel here is also a woman, which is interesting. So that's like two women in this trailer just within the first two shots, which is impressive. I think that's a great thing to see. The male voice in the background continues with
forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
This is like the rap sheet from Good Will Hunting that he's reading right now.
June 93, assault. September 93, assault. Grand Theft Auto, February 94.
So he's basically reading off all these charges, and it's kind of hard to tell, you know, whether or not she's under arrest by them, or if this is a guy reading charges from the Imperials, or whether, you know, it kind of sounds to me like the rebels just have her rap sheet and they've kind of brought her in for unknown reasons. But I think this shot is awesome, and I think this is going to excite you even more. So why don't you explain to everybody what we're seeing in the shot? There's a lot going on.
Well, first of all, I see that box droid from the inside of the Sandcrawler in episode 4, which I'm super stoked about. That little guy walking. Yeah, oh my god, I'm just so happy to see that. And then do we have some starfighters in the background? Oh, yeah.
Yes, we do.
We got that X-Wing, that four-engine X-Wing, as opposed to the new Abrams ones.
Yeah, classic. I like the new ones. I think, you know, obviously they're a lot more sleek because they cut down each engine by half, so they fold together and make a perfect circle. But I like these old ones, man. They're so cool. They're big. It's what we expect, you know? These are the ones that we grew up playing with in our bedrooms.
Man, that was my favorite toy.
Me too. I think I probably had I had X-Wings in like four different sizes. I think my favorite was the Micro Machines one that had like the little tiny Luke and the little tiny R2 that sat in it.
Yeah, did that come with the display stand too?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was the best one. It was handheld. It was so much better.
Exactly.
Didn't make noises, but it was great.
Yeah, but the wings folded out. You could like do the whole thing, and you could bring out the landing props and
for sure
land it. So yeah, we get to see one of those in the background. There's a bunch of mechanics running around. There's some pilots in the background kind of milling about, and looks like there is an R5 astromech kind of lurking in the shadows at the end of the shot to the far right. So
does that look like Yavin base?
Yeah, it kind of does. I'm assuming that they're there at this point. It's kind of hard to tell. Lost Stars kind of gives some background to some of this, but this point it's a little early for them to give any location. So I'm going to guess this is Yavin. I think they were probably camped out there for a while until the Imperials caught wind of where they were. So it's a safe assumption. I mean, there seem to be a lot of vines and stuff and cool like brick.
So that temple aesthetic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the next shot.
On your own from the age of 15.
Observes Mon Mothma, who again is being portrayed by Genevieve O'Reilly.
Reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
And Jin kind of steps into one of those classic rebel command centers with the big translucent screens with the blue lines all over them.
That never really have anything going on them. Like, those are just lines.
It's not like they're moving displays.
They're static lines.
It's not like Minority Report.
Those are just art pieces.
But everybody's always looking at them so intently and writing on them with markers.
They use markers in Star Wars? That's crazy.
I don't know.
I've never seen a writing utensil.
I just want to. I want to write with markers all over them. But yeah, they always just seem to be looking at them like something's going on. But I never see anything we're talking about. So yeah, she is kind of, you know, dissecting Jyn Erso's character a little bit, kind of giving us a little more background information. She seems to be sort of rebellious on her own, and maybe that's why she's here. We see a man standing to the right of Mon Mothma, and he's holding a data pad, so maybe he's about to bring something up on the hollow in between them. And then even further to Mon Mothma's right and directly to the left of Jyn Erso, there's a guy kind of leaning on one of those transparent things, kind of looking a little shady, but definitely a little, you know, smug or reckless. He's that classic Star Wars pilot archetype, and that is Diego Luna's character. So what do you think about that? What do you think about this guy? What do you think his deal is?
I think he looks dreamy.
Yeah? Got a little crush?
Yeah, I think he's probably just like a, you know, some kind of squadron leader or something like that at this point, you know? I mean, it's called Rogue One, so we're assuming Rogue Squadron is going to be involved in this somehow, and the Rogues are, if we can look at what the old Expanded Universe kind of taught us was that the Rogues are the most elite pilots in all of the Rebellion. So he might be Rogue Leader at this point, you know, and Rogue One here is going
to
be Jyn.
I would assume it's something to that effect. Looking at the patches on the people's shirts here, it looks like on the dude who's holding the data pad, he's a general of some sort, as long as they're sticking to the historical descriptions of the rebel rankings. So he's got the kind of Purina symbol on his patch, the five dots arranged like a Purina logo. So he is a general by that. And then Diego seems to have a captain logo with two green dots over the top of each other on his lapel. So,
all right.
Yeah, he's definitely a pilot of some sort. If he's a captain, I'm sure he's a pretty good one.
Weren't there wedge theories like floating around this movie?
Yeah, I posted a picture about that a while ago on Twitter on my blog or something. He kind of bears a slight resemblance to Wedge Antilles, so maybe?
Wedge was a rogue, so, but he was red. He was a red leader, wasn't he, in episode 4?
Yeah, but that was also after the events of this, so it's possible that he was, you know, moved for the like big attack on the Death Star. You know, they had all their best hands on deck.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So that's basically it for this shot. There are a couple more generals hanging out in the background, including one dude who kind of looks like General Dodonna from episode 4, which would be kind of cool. You know, just a guy that, like, he doesn't even have to have a role. Just a guy kind of milling around in the background that kind of looks like a dude that explained the Death Star run to all the pilots and stuff. I thought that was kind of neat. So, yeah. All right, moving on. Mon Mothma was describing how reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined Jyn Erso was, and, you know, Jyn's just kind of looking around. She's not paying a whole lot of attention, and then she answers.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
And then you see, like, this sequence of action shots where at first she's peeking around a corner, and then she is bashing the living crap out of some stormtroopers. It's kind of awesome.
This is making you very excited. I can hear it.
I'm so excited. I am a huge Felicity Jones fan. I've been following her career for a couple of years now. I saw her in a movie called Breathe In, and I absolutely loved her performance. She's an amazing actress. I'm really excited they brought her into the Star Wars universe. And this shot just, like, it's so cool. She's just, like, following this path, and she's looking around a corner. It looks like Alan Tudyk's robot character is following behind her. Then, you know, you hear this heavy whack, and the shot changes from her lurking to her just smacking a stormtrooper in the head.
Just bare-fisted punching a helmet.
She's just, like, hitting him right across the skull, and then, you know, more keep appearing, and she pulls out it looks like she actually grabs one of the stormtrooper's blasters. This looks like a stormtrooper-issue blaster, and then takes a shot at another guy, and people are running around all over. There's a big explosion. She's pulling Diego Luna's character down to the ground to save him from the shrapnel and the blast. Just looks really cool. So she's like, this is a rebellion, isn't it? And then there's all this activity, and all of a sudden it calms down again, and it just shows her back in the command room with Mon Mothma, and she just says very clearly,
I rebel.
I rebel. And I love this line. Every time I hear it, I just get more and more stoked, because she's just, like, so confident, and she just, it just seems that she knows exactly what she is. And at this point, it seems pretty clear that they're bringing her in for something big, and, you know, she may have been a rebel on her own, but, you know, know, she's finding herself now in this situation where someone else needs her help, and it kind of seems like she's the right girl for the job.
In imitating this line to somebody, just relaying kind of like the quotes, they asked me if I was doing a Terrence and Phillip impression, like a South Park character.
Why?
I guess it kind of like, I rebel. Like, that's kind of how I deliver the line. And they're like, are you doing Terrence and Phillip? Is that what you're doing right now? And honestly, that's how I, now when I'm watching this GIF over and over again on my computer screen right now, all I can hear is, I rebel. Sure, yeah. All right.
All right, buddy.
That's exactly what I'm
saying. I rebel, buddy. Well, you know, they could probably recut the South Park movie. That big action sequence where they're taking over, the Canadians are taking over, and they could just reshoot it with all the Rogue One footage.
Sounds great. I'll look forward to that recut.
Yeah, that'll be on YouTube at some point. So yeah, Mon Mothma kind of responds to this with a small smile, and she looks down. I think that's funny. You know, Mon Mothma has always shown that she's been more of a motherly figure. She's a politician at heart. You know, she and Leia come from the same sort of stock, and Mon Mothma actually served with Leia's mother. Whether or not she knows that or not, I'm not entirely sure, but I think Mon Mothma is an awesome character, and I'm really glad that they brought her back.
Hopefully she has more than just like a one scene role in this movie, you know?
I can't imagine she'll get more than 5 minutes of screen time, though. It's still a minor role. I think it's great that they included her, but she's not exactly like a super exciting character as far as movies go. She's been included in some of the other books, including Lost Stars.
And a couple of the comics I've been reading, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I haven't caught up with all the comics, so that's awesome to hear. Yeah, it's great. She's one of the great Star Wars characters. Like, she's iconic. She didn't have a huge role in Star Wars Episode 4, but, you know, everybody remembers her.
It's so odd to describe someone as iconic who has such a small role. I don't know.
But she is. Like, you know, she was a very... Obviously, she was an influential person in the Rebellion, but, you know, she's a woman. Like, that was a big role.
I guess within the context of the universe, she's iconic, but she's not, like, I guess, to our world, I wouldn't call her iconic.
Right. I mean, how many people could tell you the name of the actress who originally played Mon Mothma? I couldn't. You know, it's written in my post here, but I didn't know it by heart. I had to look it up, but I remember her very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of her, at least in the trailer. We get the Lucasfilm logo next.
This has changed from Force Awakens?
A little bit. They seem to change it up based on the movie. This one is very shiny, but also sort of smudged. So it's kind of like a tempered steel, maybe has seen a little action, but it's still slightly polished. So it's just kind of settling you into that sort of rugged feel that I think Gareth Edwards is sort of going for in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works. What do we got next?
Oh, we got Jin just kind of looking like she's coming out of a scene from Black Hawk Down, I guess. She's just in some kind of landing craft leaving some planet surface. Kind of looks like a wooded area. Or she's landing. She could be landing too, but the way the light's moving.
Yeah.
It seems to be like she's moving upwards.
Yeah, moving upwards or at least maybe forward. I thought that maybe this is shuttle, but now that I'm looking at the sun, you make a good point. It seems like the sun is moving in a different direction than it would if you were just moving forward. So, yeah, probably some sort of transport shuttle of some sort. I like the point that you make with Black Hawk Down. Like, this whole trailer seems to have more of a, you know, sort of military vibe, and I think that definitely fits, but... It's new.
That's something I want to talk to you about after. After we kind of go through this trailer, that's kind of feeding into my interpretation of the trailer versus yours, I feel like.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. Moving on. So in the background we hear...
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
And then this shot. Mike, please explain to the listeners this amazing piece of... photography.
What appears to be a Lucas wipe, but is actually just a giant shadow moving across the face of the newly constructed Death Star. And kind of in the foreground, we get this really classic shot of a Star Destroyer. So happy about that. It looks mm-hmm. just like one of the models.
It's beautiful. This looks amazing. And it's a lot shinier than, or maybe a lot brighter and more white than the Star Destroyers that we saw in the original trilogy. I've been reading up on this, and you know, some people are saying, well, that's not really true to the Star Destroyers that we saw in the original trilogy, like, they're a lot more gray and a lot more dull. And you know what? This is the beginning of the Empire's gigantic fleet. So I'm going to say these are how they originally look. And in the original trilogy, they're just a little dirty because they've been fighting a war. So I think these look sweet. Like, this brand new Coke White Star Destroyer. And it's just like, it's
like an 80s drug dealer.
It's pimped out, man. It looks awesome. And you just see it in, like, the like you said, that wipe. I totally thought that was just like a George Lucas wipe. And then you see the texture behind it. And that's so obviously Death Star. And
this trailer's just turning into something else.
It zooms out, and like, you just see the scope of the thing. And we get to see the dish being set into the Death Star. Like, this is the moment of completion. And then all of these Star Destroyers are just around it for scale. And it is massive. It's so cool. We've never seen the Death Star like this before. Like, this is so much more detailed and, like, more than I ever expected to see of the Death Star. The models are great. What they were able to pull off in the 70s was awesome, but this is just so epic. I love this shot. I keep looking at this, and I save this on my phone so I could pull it up every now and then just to look at this shot. It's so beautiful.
Can't you? You could use a GIF as your phone's wallpaper and on an iPhone 6, I believe. Or
are you like serious?
Well, you could. I think you can make one of those
live wallpapers.
Yeah, those live wallpapers with it. And you could just, every time you open your phone, you could just see it happening. It's kind of like a live photo.
Yeah, but the aspect is wrong.
Absolutely wrong. It would look terrible.
It may be right if I flipped it, but that would be kind of funny. It'd be like the Star Destroyer was sinking.
The enemy's gate is down, though. Have you thought about that?
What?
Ender's Game.
No, not familiar.
In space, there is no left to right. There is no up or down. So that Star Destroyer very well could be pointing down right now.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Enemy's gate is down. So anyway, the lighting in this shot is really what gets me. I just want to know what the light source is, because it's just so bright and white, like you said, on that Star Destroyer. And just the idea of, like, I know it's CG. You know, I know this is all computer-generated imaging here, but it just, to me, it just speaks of, like, moving cameras around a model, like a tiny model, you know, just like in the 70s.
I'm assuming they're near a sun of some sort, you know, some gigantic solar light source of some sort. I mean, they have to have something so they can build this thing. I mean, they can't build it in the middle of the space without any light source. So I'm really excited to see this one on a gigantic screen. I'm going to see this in the biggest possible IMAX screen that I can find.
4D.
Every D. I want 5D. I want that thing going up my nose. Coke White.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. Okay, so...
Is that clear?
Ask the general back in the command room, and Jenner so responds with some sarcasm and this glint in her eye, and she's just... She has no respect for this guy. And she's just like...
Yes, sir.
That's because she's a rebel.
Yeah,
she's
a real rebel.
She rebels.
She's a rebel to the rebellion.
She's got no respect for anybody. I can just tell by looking at her.
She's a street rat. I can tell. She came from the streets. She's pretty cool. I'm excited to see more of her. Then we get this this splash, and it's this December. So we get to see this full movie this December, followed by a really cool shot with a bunch of people rushing out of a hangar. We got some X-Wings in the background. We got that Gonk droid again. He's just kind of waddling along there as these armed troopers and some X-Wing pilots rush out. I didn't pull any stills of these pilots, but I did see some taken around that it's possible that some of these pilots were ones that we actually saw in the Death Star assault in Episode 4.
Do we have Porkins?
I don't see any Porkins.
I just want to see Porkins. I need Porkins back in my life.
Porkins is a little further behind. He's not as quick-footed as these other ones are.
He's grabbing a quick snack before this assault.
Yeah, he's got to grab a sandwich. I feel so bad when people rag on Porkins like that. He's a good guy.
He was an integral part of that assault. You know, he sacrificed himself for the rebellion.
All right, Mike. I'm going to let you take this next one. And everything that comes with it, because you're a little more attuned to the expanded universe than I am. And there are a lot of theories attached to this shot that I think you would probably be able to give more credit to.
Well, I mean, we got a white man with gray hair and a very, very white Imperial uniform on, standing in front of what looks like maybe planetary schematics or schematics for a Death Star, more likely.
Would you call this a Coke white uniform?
I mean, you got Coke on the mind, man. I don't know. It is a very starch white uniform.
Starch, that's a good word for it. Very crisp.
Yeah, we're gonna use the PG-13. Well, no, I guess you can you have Coke in? I don't know. Yeah, we'll use that term for it. Yeah, I mean, so you, some people's theory, including yourself, I believe you're tossing it out there that we're looking at Grand Admiral Thrawn here prior to him becoming a Grand Admiral. My contention is that Grand Admiral Thrawn is a Chiss, but, you know, with the expanded universe kind of being tossed away at this point, Grand Admiral Thrawn could be any variant or just change to a human, I guess.
Yeah. It may not even be named Thrawn, but, you know, they may take some of the Thrawn-ness and give it to this character who is being played by Ben Mendelsohn. So this is a pretty big role. It seems like this guy is going to be one of the main adversaries for the Rogue One team. We just don't know exactly who he is or what role he's going to play. But in this shot, he's holding a gun. Did you notice that?
No, I did not. Is that a white pistol in his hand?
Well, there's a bit of a glare on it, but I don't know. He's got his head down. It's kind of zooming in on him real slow, but he's just standing there with his arms crossed and a pistol in his hand. It's very menacing. I'm really intrigued by whoever
this is.
He
looks like he's just standing in like some kind of like planning room, some boardroom on the Death Star or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely Imperial space.
Well, why is he holding a pistol in an Imperial space? Is he just like threatening his colleagues? I don't know, casually.
Well, I think maybe based on a shot we see at the end of this, he's awaiting one of the rebels to come into this room.
Execution or something like that?
Maybe a standoff. I expect this is more of a standoff where the door opens from maybe our hero's perspective and we see this greeting them as they come in the door.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a capture scenario better, but there's no way to tell.
We'll see. So, yeah, again, this is a admiral, according to his ranking insignia. This is not a grand admiral, so that doesn't give a whole lot to the Thrawn theory, but
Thrawn hasn't become a grand admiral until after the Battle of Hoth, I believe.
Well, there you go. So, who knows? Maybe this is Disney's chance to bring Thrawn to the fold. Thrawn was a pretty beloved character from the expanded universe, but we'll see. I don't know if bringing him in as a white guy is exactly what they should be doing, but that's their choice. So,
well, I mean, going into the rest of this trailer without jumping too far ahead, I feel like there's not a whole lot of alien presence in the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. I've heard it both ways. I've heard that they're going to have like a lot of more realistic aliens, you know, rather than, you know, any CG. They're supposed to do it the right way and make all the props and stuff. But looking through this trailer, I don't really see a lot. And I've also heard rumors that there have been production, like budgetary concerns for this movie. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I mean, it seems to be pretty well assembled, but I don't know what the ended budget was for this movie. So we'll see. I hope to see, you know, some aliens in the markets and stuff. We see some market shots further on, but for now, it just seems to be a lot of normal looking humans and stormtroopers, of course, which we see in the next shot.
Yeah, that look like civilians in the foreground there, kind of just like a wearing veils and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. They look militant, and I can't tell if this guy has his hands cuffed behind his back
or
not.
Yeah, those hands are cuffed for sure.
But, I mean, they have a lot of stuff on them, and it looks like the guy behind him has some kind of canister, and he has, like,
hairy
gauntlets.
Arms.
Yeah, hairy arms and gauntlets on. So, I don't know. They're getting the stink eye from these stormtroopers that are walking by alongside a tank.
Yeah, that's a large tank.
Yeah, it looks like the tank is carrying some cargo, which I didn't notice until just now, but it's got some boxes in the back. What I was paying attention to the most when I was going through this trailer for the first time were the troopers sitting on top of the tank. Did you see these?
The driver? It looks more like a droid almost. They're pretty static.
Yeah, they have variant armor on, which is cool. It's kind of a throwback to the Clone Wars where they have like blue paint on them, but their helmets are a lot different. They have like, it looks like they have blast shields kind of sitting on top. And a flatter nose. It's definitely a different helmet than we've ever seen before. So this is kind of neat. Just another variant of the Stormtrooper uniform, which we're going to see a lot of in this trailer, actually. It's kind of interesting how much they're changing it up for this movie. At this point, there's not a lot of like background vocals or anything. They're just showing off a bunch of really cool shots. So we see these troopers here. They're kind of rolling through. And then we get the shot of Forrest Whitaker kind of crutching along He's got his cane, doesn't look like he can walk really well, but he looks pretty badass.
Yeah, it looks like a suit out of Mass Effect or something like that. I'm not really sure.
It's definitely kind of post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, he's got scarred face. Beautiful teeth, though, I will say. His teeth look magnificent for what we might assume to be a rebel or some kind of militant.
Wait, you see his teeth? His mouth looks closed to me.
No, not in this shot, but later on in this trailer, you're going to see his teeth, and they are very white and very straight teeth. Looking great.
I didn't pay attention to that. To this one, in this shot, he just kind of like limps forward, and then he begins to speak. He starts narrating the rest of the trailer, but the shot breaks to show us another variant of the Stormtrooper armor, which is this completely blacked out... I don't even know what to call this. I think some people are calling them Shadow Troopers, or some people are calling them Death Troopers. I don't know if they have an official name yet, but as Forrest Whitaker's character says,
"What will you do when they catch you?"
It just shows this really imposing shot of these black Stormtroopers.
They play the Cops theme song right after that. It's an odd choice for this trailer, but yeah, I thought the same thing.
Well, Alexander Desplat is taking a new direction. So yeah, we get this kind of scary-looking... Trooper. It's got kind of a gaunt face, looks more skeletal, and again, it's all black. There's some fire going in the background. Looks like there's a moisture evaporator of some sort there, because, you know, you can't have a Star Wars movie without a bunch of those around. But yeah, definitely different. Cuts to another scene where we have, looks like at first we have Jyn Erso and Diego Luna's character, as well as Alan Tudyk's droid character, running down some sort of Imperial pathway. It almost looks like a subway station, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, I believe that's the train I take every day on my way to work.
Oh, that's you. Right there in the foreground. You see him right in between the two characters, just kind of walking along?
Uh-huh, handcuffed. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, they're about to walk right into you.
That's me on my way to work, handcuffed, for sure.
All right, so also in the shot, looks like running down a similar hallway, there are a ton of troopers, and they're not in formation. They are just kind of running, and there's a whole mixed bag of them. Looks like our standard white ones, as well as some of the darker sand trooper-looking things that we have. And these are different than the ones that we saw in A New Hope, kind of combing the sands. But they're running along on both levels, probably looking for these guys as they run. And then we get a short shot of some Rebel X-Wing pilots walking through a marketplace with Stormtrooper guards. And here is where I thought we'd get some aliens, and it looks like there might be some aliens, but any of the ones that look alien are cloaked or have some sort of head cover. So it's, you know, I consider that kind of a cop-out. Nothing like too different looking here. Except for this guy. Do you see this guy on the far left of that shot? I know it's hard to see. But yeah, long hair, long white hair. He looks familiar, and I can't place it. But he looks really familiar. And I wonder if he's important, because in the full shot, not in this GIF that I have on the website, which goes kind of fast to save space, but it definitely frames him pretty well on the left side watching these figures walk by. So... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe there's something there. Probably not.
Don't know yet. Yeah.
Take the next one here. Who do we got?
Well, we've got what you kind of described as a blind man, I guess, in a cloak, using a stick to take down a bunch of stormtroopers.
In one shot, you see like five stormtroopers standing up, and in the next one, you see one on the ground and the next one falling. So it's safe to assume that all of them have been getting their ass kicked by this one guy who is apparently blind and played by Donnie Yen.
Is that, and we see red garb in the background, but we're not assuming that's nothing to do with Imperial Guard or anything like that, you think?
No, I don't think they'd be like crouching over looking into the rubble of a crashed X-Wing.
Stormtroopers wouldn't be there in combat while Imperial troopers are.
Yeah, I think
Imperial guards.
Yeah, I think those Imperial guards are just strictly outside of whatever room the Emperor is in.
Or guarding his yacht, as we find in the comics.
Yeah, or anything I guess he considers valuable. In the background of this shot with Donnie Yen kicking ass, Forrest Whitaker continues,
"What will you do if they break you?"
And then it cuts to this other shot where we get some more of those dark-looking troopers firing some pretty heavy guns towards what looks like some sort of, maybe antenna station of some sort, communications array, or
looks like a landing shuttle.
It does. I slowed the shot down and went frame by frame to kind of look at it, but it's definitely not a ship. It kind of looks it appears to be a stable body. I think it's a building of some sort, and those seem to be antenna, but it does look like Kylo Ren's ship, doesn't it? With those wings?
Yes, it does. It looks like two of them back to back, actually.
Yeah, they blow it up, and we see a rebel kind of taking cover. I was going to say, it's hard to tell whether or not he's shooting at that or they are, because he's carrying an even bigger gun, kind of looks like a grenade launcher of some sort, or a rocket
sniper
launcher.
Rifle.
Yeah,
or something. It's got a scope on it. It might be a sniper rifle.
But it has a really big barrel.
Silencer.
Maybe. I don't know. Either way, they're both pointing at this. Well, he's very directly pointing at this thing, but then taking cover after it blows up. So, I don't know. Maybe this is Rebel. Maybe this is Imperial. It's hard to say.
I mean, what I do know is that Admiral is definitely getting his cape all dirty and messed up when he's walking through that friggin' swamp or whatever.
Yeah, but this shot is so cool.
He's just walking straight towards the fire.
They say the badasses walk away from the fire without looking back, but he looks so cool walking straight towards it. And there are all these dead bodies just kind of floating around in the shallower water. This is a neat shot.
Those are all his men, too. So it's,
yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't care at all. He's just walking right through. Speaking of those Imperial guards, Mike, what do we get here?
There they are.
Yeah, we got two of them.
So what's in that? Is that like a hologram chamber? Is that thing? We got a cloaked figure, all in black, mm-hmm. kneeling down in front of what looks like Zordon's chamber from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So we have to assume this is a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers tie-in at this point, I think.
Well, they do have a new movie coming out. They've really got to push it.
Oh my God, I can't wait. This is going to be a great year. I can feel it.
Yeah, the shot is really short. It's like painfully short, but this is definitely one of those like Imperial rooms where, you know, the big bad guy goes to be alone. So we have this cloaked figure who doesn't look like Vader. Vader never wore a cloak like this after he got the helmet.
At least. Yeah.
Definitely after the Anakin name was dropped and Darth Vader was the role that he took. He never wore this. So it doesn't look like Vader. It's kind of hard to say who this is. I think it's possible that maybe this is one of the Inquisitors. We get a little glimpse of the Inquisitors and Rebels. Obviously, we don't know the fate of all of them. Maybe there's some more out there, and this is another one of the Emperor's, you know, Jedi hunters of some sort. Either way, I can only assume that the Emperor is standing either behind or within this cylinder. It kind of looks as the, like, if you look at it really closely when the shot fades, that tube doesn't seem to go all the way to the ground. It kind of looks like maybe it's raising up. So maybe this is like a healing chamber of some sort, maybe to sustain the Emperor's life, like kind of like a back to tank, but a sauna.
It could be something to explain his Palpatine's lack of presence in episode 4. You know, maybe the reason why he didn't show up at all in that movie is because of his condition or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All hypothesis, no facts.
The only thing that I can really say that indicates that this has to be the Emperor that the figure is kneeling towards is that these two Imperial guards are staring directly at this chamber, like this glowing rod, and they only look directly at the Emperor. They only look at him at all times to make sure that everything's kosher. So I would venture to say that the Emperor is definitely in the scene. Should be interesting to see who would play him. You know, do you think they'd get the original guy? I don't see why they wouldn't. He's still alive, so.
Is he?
He's 71.
He'll be in.
I would assume so. But the biggest question here is, who is in the cloak?
No way to tell.
Impossible to be sure.
And then this next shot we got, oh my gosh. This is, my roommate texted me about this when the trailer came out.
Yeah? Is this the first one that you heard about?
No, he's just like, did you see those AT-ATs? I was like, I saw them. And he's like, they shoot. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I think the shot is awesome. We see, let's see, at first we see Forrest Whitaker continues to talk and he says,
if you continue to fight.
There are those teeth, those pearly whites.
And yeah, he does have very white teeth. You're right about that. we see some of the characters running towards the AT-ATs, which is cool, including Jyn Erso and Diego Luna's character. And then it kind of pans up and we get this AT-AT that's looking right at him and fires a shot. If you freeze the frame, the shot goes right past Diego Luna's head. They couldn't have made it any closer. Like, it goes right between his head and shoulder. It's kind of cool. So that's neat. We'll see if they take those down or if they're just trying to get behind him. But there's like a fleet of them. I mean, there's four of them visible in the shot.
That's a lot of badass to take down.
That's pretty cool. It's neat to see them in a different landscape. You know, we've only seen them on Hoth so far, and while that was cool, like,
it kind of trudged around on Endor, on the forest moon of Endor in Return of the Jedi when Luke turns himself in.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just kind of clomping through the forest.
Yeah, it's true. I wish they would have put more of those in Battlefront. They have a couple of them in there, which is kind of neat. They actually knock down trees and stuff, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you continue to fight...
If you continue to fight, what will you become?
And the last shot of this before the closing credit, you get Jyn Erso, and she turns around in full shiny Imperial garb, and...
She's got some sticks on her back.
Yeah. She's got batons or perhaps blades of some sort. And she's got a big chest plate. She's got the Imperial logo on her arm. And,
well, there's that Force theme. It's playing on top of the Imperial March there.
Man.
So maybe some metaphor, you know?
This is such a cool shot. The lights just kind of, like, form up from the bottom and kind of looks like one of those Bespin tubes. But
yeah,
it's definitely very Imperial looking, so this is neat.
She was just standing in the dark up until then. I don't know why she would do that. It's just...
Waiting for the lights to turn
on. Somebody's walking in. She's like, oh, I didn't know you were just standing here in the dark. Jyn, this is... you're wearing an Imperial uniform, too. This is interesting turn of events for our movie.
Yeah, so this begs the question, is she turning on the Rebellion, or is this part of the plan? Yeah.
I mean, she rebels. We know she rebels.
She does rebel, but is she rebelling from the Rebellion, or is this just, like, part of
the plan?
Do you
think she's rebelling against the Rebellion, though?
No, I don't. I think this is, you know, this is part of the plan. Obviously, we know how this movie ends. They get the plans.
But what happens to her? Happens to her? Does she become an Imperial? You know, does she go deep undercover and just get lost in it?
Maybe.
Who knows? Then we get this big Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Yeah.
December in real 3D and IMAX 3D.
I get so confused with all the Ds. Like, I see it in real D, 3D, XD.
Too many Ds.
Very confusing.
It should be good and bad. Those are the two ways to watch a Star Wars movie. Good and bad version. And there's really no way to tell which is which. You just go in.
Bad version is when you go to my local theater.
The sound's cutting out.
Yeah, the sound's cutting out because the speakers blew in the first showing.
Oof.
Bad times. Oof. I'm excited for this, Mike. I think this trailer was sweet. I think the movie is everything I hope for it to be. And honestly, from the start when they announced these new movies coming out... I was more excited for Rogue One than I was Episode 7. And that's not to say that I didn't love Episode 7, because I do, but I love the potential of these anthology movies even more, because it gives Disney and Lucasfilm an opportunity to explore the Star Wars universe outside of the Skywalker storyline. You know, it's a very linear story that we have so far, and even this one is tied into that original story, but it's different, and it has a different tone. And I think that's an awesome thing to see, because one of the biggest complaints, at least with Episode 7 and the possibilities and the rumors that we're talking about with Episode 8, is that it follows the same tone and that it's getting a little dry, and that they're kind of rehashing things where they should be exploring new territory. And I think that Rogue One is really going to set the bar for how they move along with these anthology movies going forward.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Do you agree that it's gotten dry, though?
Oh. No. I mean, I won't say that, because I love the tone of the Star Wars movies. You know, I want those episodic movies to fit that feel. The prequel movies didn't fit that, and that's why a lot of people didn't like it. So we're getting back into that, but with all the similarities with Episode 7 to Episode 4... You know, I get that criticism. I understand it. Doesn't mean that I agree with it or that I think it's wrong. I think that the way that they move the story along with Episode 7 to sort of echo Episode 4 was great. I think that was smart, and I liked how that turned out. But I like the possibility of them doing something different. You know, I like watching different kinds of movies. I like watching these big, you know, these big action movies set in a more dirty, grimy, war zone type atmosphere. And that seems to be what we're getting with Rogue One. So I'm excited the possibility of that. I'm excited about the possibility of spy movies within the Star Wars universe. And, you know, even like maybe not romantic comedies, but, you know, the more dramatic.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Jar Jar. And
just, you know, exploring all of the aspects of film that I enjoy, but within the universe that I love, because this is a huge universe. There's no reason why they can't branch out and find different stories and put it within this universe. They can bring it all in. It's space, you know, there are infinite possibilities. So this is just the first step in that. And I'm really excited to see how it turns out and, you know, how the box office ratings go for it, because it, you know, it's really going to set the tone. They have two more of these planned, and I think the way they fund those and the way that they push those with the marketing is going to be a direct result of how this movie pans out.
I mean, I don't think there's any way it couldn't be a success at this point. It's not getting the groans that Batman Superman kind of got as it kind of was revealed more and more to fans. I don't know. I think there's a lot this movie has to offer, for sure. You know, like, it's definitely looking into one of my favorite aspects of Star Wars, which is, like, you know, covert ops and starfighter pilots.
Mm-hmm.
But this trailer didn't deliver for me, you know. What it gave me was kind of just, I guess, I want to try and, remain self-aware in my criticism of this, because I know that fear of change is a big thing driving what people don't like about anything, any trailer coming out. I'm not scared of something different from Star Wars, but what I am kind of scared of is losing the sense of wonder. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a whole lot of wonder that's going into this. And maybe because war is real, war is gritty, and that's maybe it's a more realistic approach to it. You know, this is like, this is, it really strikes me as, you know, like an Elysium type film. This is striking me as almost like a Bourne film, a James Bond movie, you know, more high tech, kind of different setting one, albeit, but really just it, if you just took Star Wars off of this title and obviously change the name from Rogue, you know, this would have just been, you know, what's that movie? Edge of Tomorrow, you know. This could have very well have been, you know, an Edge of Tomorrow universe or something like that. I mean, take the X-Wings out of the background and you've just got a sci-fi war film and then without the premise of Star Wars behind it, there's nothing intriguing about it. You know, it's just, what will you become? It's, this girl is conflicted, you know, she's a rebel, but she might become the enemy, and that's it. And I feel like Star Wars is the only thing this movie has going for it in terms of novelty, which is a weird thing to say because it's, you know, novelty is not something that Star Wars is getting credit for after episode 7.
I think that's a good point. I mean, I like to think of it from the opposite perspective, where there are all these great sci-fi movies that, you know, could very well be in the Star Wars universe. Just like I said, you know, there are infinite possibilities. So I can kind of see where you're coming from, where maybe if you were to bring in these sci-fi stories into the Star Wars universe, maybe it's just kind of piggybacking off of the Star Wars brand rather than the actual story. And I think maybe that's just why they're starting out with Rogue One. You know, it's tied into the original trilogy. It's a story that we know happened, but we don't know how it happened. And obviously they feel they have enough of a story here to fill a feature-length film, despite us all knowing the outcome of that. But I think it's a place to start. And I think they're just kind of feeling their way through to see how this is going to go, because I don't think that episodes 8 and 9 are going to be the end of the Star Wars movies. I think they're going to continue to make Star Wars movies for a long time. And I think they know that in order to keep the brand exciting and to move it forward in the way that, you know, a lot of Marvel movies and other things go, you need to branch out and you need to have other storylines to follow rather than just this one linear story that drags on and on. Because otherwise what you get in a couple of decades is, you know, 15 movies and you don't know where to begin. You know, where am I supposed to start so I get this whole thing? How many of them do I have to watch to get the whole story? When you could be doing these anthology movies that, you know, are still within the universe and hold a lot of the same qualities that make a Star Wars movie great, but don't necessarily need all that auxiliary screen time to make you understand what's going on. And I think that's something we're going to see as time goes on. And maybe you're right. Maybe those movies will basically just be pretty okay sci-fi flicks with a Star Wars logo attached to the trailer. But who knows? Maybe there'll be some really great ones that we all really enjoy and fit within the Star Wars universe, but don't necessarily rely on maybe the original trilogy or the ensuing trilogies that we're going to be getting in the next couple decades to tell that story and to enjoy it. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Rogue One is a safe place to start. Looks interesting. I'm really excited to see the change in tone and to see what story they can add to what we know so far.
Yeah, no doubt that it's going to be like a great experiment, I feel like, here. I think they're doing it right, you know? They've got the cast, they've got what looks like they've got a budget, you know? I know that you were mentioning problems, but it looks like they've got something to work with here.
Yeah.
They've got the director. I wasn't a huge fan of Godzilla, of Edwards Godzilla. What else did he do before that? What was his other thing?
Didn't he do Monsters?
Yes, he did. Monsters was good, but it felt incomplete, you know?
Very small budget.
Yeah, so he did a lot with a little, which is great, which he seems to be really great at doing. This movie, it smacks of Godzilla, it smacks of Monsters, it smacks of just sci-fi. And I'm up for the experiment, but I don't know. It's just, I hope it doesn't kind of take away from what Star Wars is. It'd be kind of like adding like a... I don't know. I feel like maybe this is what Star Trek fans felt when Abrams redid Star Trek in 2009, when he kind of like took this thing that was one thing and made it another, you know, kind of like an edgy, lens flare filled action fest, you know, and that was 2009 versus what had happened before that, you know, and obviously that's fear of change driving any negative reaction to that. Initially, at least, until they actually see the movie.
Yeah.
Or until it's presented. But so it's not a bad thing to kind of change or, like, mix genre with universe. But I don't know. I guess I'm rambling, but I'm ready for the experiment. And I'm excited for November. My best friend, Ben, I texted him when they made the announcement for the trailer. And I was like, hey, oh, check this out. And he's like, I don't watch trailers. And I was like, why not? He's like, well, I'm excited for this movie as it is, and I don't need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to ruin anything. And I was like, if I'm flying a plane tomorrow, if that plane goes down, I need to know what the art direction was going to be like for Star Wars Rogue One.
Yeah.
I needed to know. And I'm glad I looked at it. And I'm keeping my expectations kind of just right down the middle for this one. I know it's going to be an exciting movie, just like Godzilla was, just like Monster was, but I don't want to feel like there's nothing hinging on this for me, you know?
I don't think this is going to make or break the future of Star Wars in any case, but I do think it's going to sort of set a tone for the auxiliary movies that come out, the anthologies and the Star Wars stories that they are planning on and continue to plan in the future. So far, the ones that are rumored to come after this are a young Han Solo flick and possibly a Boba Fett standalone. So again, these are more tie-ins to the original trilogy, which are safe. I think they probably have some ideas brewing for ones that are a little further out, or at least I like to think that they do. But again, I don't think that they'll be announcing anything like that until they see at least how one of these goes.
Yeah, I'm fighting. I'm suppressing my my gut reaction to the Boba Fett and Han movies, but it's tough to do that.
Oh, you just got to cast the right guy for Han Solo, you know? I'm not opposed to it.
I don't want to think about it until I see a formal announcement for this film.
That'll be a whole nother episode. We'll just be picking apart.
Just a part of the rumor mill for now.
Anyway, I'm excited about it. I think there's definitely some opportunity here. And as far as trailers go, I thought this was a pretty well-cut trailer.
Absolutely.
They definitely stuck a lot in there. They had a lot of interesting things that you really had to dig into to kind of get excited. I think at a macro level, this was a very straightforward action movie trailer. But at a micro level, this was packed full of Star Wars fan service. So all these brand new stormtroopers and weapons and characters kind of hidden in the background. Like, they did a great job with this movie. I think they put a lot of detail into this that will really count with the fans that care.
constructive criticism for this, because I know my word gets along. It goes far in the cinematic world. More Starfighter stuff, man. That's all I was pulling for, was just some zero G combat or something like that, you know, and also more aliens. You know, that's all I want out of this movie: just zero G Starfighter combat and aliens.
Mike, would a Top Gun movie in the Star Wars universe make you the most happy boy alive?
Absolutely. Or just a game. I just need a new flight sim game to play, because I keep rewatching YouTube videos of TIE Fighter playthroughs, mm-hmm. and I'm coming up on the end of it, and I just can't do it again.
I could see it coming. I don't know who'd make it. I don't know if EA has the exclusive license to Star Wars games right now, but I could see that. I don't think it'd be added to Battlefront. That would be awesome. I'd really love that. I really like the flight modes that they have, like the fighter squadron modes in Battlefront currently, but some space battles would be sweet.
Those don't even touch TIE Fighter as far as the complexity of the controls in that game.
Man, I was just playing the original Star Wars arcade game. I went to the 16-bit bar in Columbus. It's like this, you know, it's like a bar with a bunch of free arcade games.
Mm, hipster stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool, but I was trying to play this game, and man, it's hard. Like, it's not just difficult. It's just like, I don't even know if I'm winning. Because
it was a simpler time. 16 bits was a simpler time for gaming.
When you start this game, have you ever played this, the original Star Wars arcade game?
I saw your screenshot of that on Instagram, and I don't even know what I was looking at.
Really? Well, you start out and you're like outside of, you're kind of far away from the Death Star, and you have to fight a couple fighter pilots, TIE Fighters, and Darth Vader himself. So, you know, you can tell the difference between the two, obviously, because of the ships. And this is all, like, really old-school 3D vector art. And you're, you know, you get to use this pivoting gunner wheel, and you fire shots, and sometimes you kill them, sometimes you don't. Like, you know, it seems like you're getting them because your pointer is right on top of them, but like I said, it's really hard to tell whether or not you're doing okay. And then once you get past them, you kind of funnel yourself down past these towers on the Death Star surface until you get to the main channel where you're gonna, you know, fire that last shot off into the exhaust pipe. And it's really fun. Like, you know, it's pretty straightforward, and you're just kind of like shooting guns off the walls to get points. And then once you get to the end, you're supposed to hit like the a couple of buttons to like fire your torpedoes down the thing. And, you know, honestly, I didn't know that the thing was coming up, because there's not really like an indicator that the exhaust port is coming anytime soon. All of a sudden, you just kind of like don't see guns anymore. And then you see this hole coming up really fast. And then you just like, you know, kind of shoot towards it, and then all of a sudden it fires completely different torpedoes, and I think it's an automatic thing, and you just automatically win, and then it gets harder the next stage. But, man, I couldn't take down Darth Vader for the life of me. I was hitting him with everything I had, but he would not go down. There has to be some sort of trick to this game, and I'm going to be watching every YouTube video I can, so next time I play it, that's my goal. I want to take down Vader.
That's one game I have not seen before.
I'm sure there's an emulated version of it I'll be able to get on my Mac or play in a browser window, but I don't know. There's just something about holding that controller in your hand and going at it with a beer next to you. It's a nice feeling.
I feel like the beer has a heavy impact on your enjoyment of this game. Much like the cocaine and your enjoyment of this trailer here.
Pimped out Star Destroyer. That's all I have to say on that as one pimped ride.
Well, job well done, Jacob, on this one. I think you really outdid yourself on this trailer post. And again, curbside.audio is the website to check this post out, with all these amazing gifts that Jacob made. Do you have anything else you want to add before, anything to plug before we head off?
I guess if you want to, check us out on Instagram. We've been filling that up with some more stuff lately. There's some really interesting side-by-side comparisons of one of our co-hosts and one of Star Wars Rebels main characters. You decide whether or not they look exactly the same or not. This past weekend while I was in Columbus, I also got some headshots taken for professional purposes, but I brought my First Order Stormtrooper helmet along for fun, and the photographer took a couple of pictures there, so I'm posting those up there for fun. That was a good time, just walking around downtown Columbus with a Stormtrooper helmet on my head. You know what? I didn't feel silly.
That's good. I'm glad.
I felt a lot less self-conscious when I had the helmet on, because nobody could see my face, and I wasn't like just cheesing or like looking, you know, surly for the professional shots. I just had like this helmet on my face and I could do whatever I wanted. I just had to kind of look around.
They're like your sunglasses. They're your invisible glasses, like the kid from Big Daddy. He just puts them on whenever he's nervous.
It was awesome. I had a bunch of people at this really cool brewery in Columbus just staring at me outside of the windows because I was taking all my professional photos inside, but then I went in like outside into the sun. I just put a Star Wars helmet on. I was walking around outside.
It's just your hat. It's just your daily hat to use.
Like, does he have a skin condition? Like, what's going on? But no, it was a good time. So yeah, follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. We are at Mike Comite and at Jacob Tender. I recently got my original Twitter handle back. It took 7 years, but I got it. So
congrats.
Thank you. I was so happy. You can follow us individually, or you can catch us at Bantha Fodder FM on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook. We'll have links to all that in the show notes and on our website, which is banthafodder.fm. All the show notes will be there as well. So you can get all of your needs at that source.
Until next time, Jacob, this time you say goodbye.
Doot-de-loot-doot.
Doot-doot.
Gotcha!